Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone listening to the Milwaukee Mob in Radio Land. This is your host, Wayne Klingman, part of Made Men Production, with our great guest tonight, Edwin Santana, who is closing from an undisclosed location because of the nature of his work in law enforcement. Mr. Santana has been working in law enforcement with gangs and gang suppression and gang education for the last 21 years. He is a great man. His leadership knows no limits. I've made a couple of inquiries about him before he came on the show this evening, and everybody raved about his professionalism, how he likes to get the job done professionally with the love of his fellow man, and I'm happy to say he's probably the best-looking man in law enforcement in the United States today. So with no further ado, I give you the good-looking Edwin Santana. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Wayne, how are you doing? Incredible introduction. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to your show. I'm very blessed to be on Milwaukee Mob, and I hope I could answer a lot of questions for you and your audience today.
I'm sure you will, sir. So anyway, let's hear a little bit about your background first, sir.
Oh, wow. I'm a 21-year veteran of the Morris County Sheriff's Office, and I'm a correctional officer, but yet in the state that I work in, we have arresting authorities, so I've been able to be assigned to various task forces throughout my career. I worked narcotics, fugitives, gang unit suppression. I've been able to train law enforcement on becoming street gang cops. But most of all, my passion is educating the youth and educating the community, along with my fellow brothers and sisters in law enforcement, on the issues that we have today with the gangs coming in and plaguing our communities.
Interesting, still is. What of all the world things that you can get into in the United States today, what got you interested in doing law enforcement, sir?
Ah, wow, just the flip of a coin, I guess you could say. I always wanted to be in law enforcement, but yet I was always shy to actually put my hat in the arena. I finally took the a test. I got called through the sheriff's office, and honestly, I took a job as a correctional officer, not knowing what it was about, what I would be doing. All I knew was what I saw on film. But my first days, I was walking into the tiers, talking to the inmates, and finding out different things that kind of made me scratch my head. I was starting to notice inmates calling each other by brothers and sisters and manos and manitas, and not realizing, you know, that the common term that they're using for family bond was a term that was used within the actual gang. So at the time, within my jurisdiction, we were limited to Latin Kings, Nietas, white supremacist groups, Nations of God and Earth, pagan motorcycle gang members. And that was in my rookie years back in 96. And based on that, I wanted to learn more about this culture. So from learning from the inmates to stepping out into the different conventions and conferences that law enforcement had at that time, I was able to meet individuals that were able to guide me, befriend me, mold me into the gang cop I am today.
Wow. That alone must be an incredible story. So let me ask you this. We all get what we get in from TV about gangs. Do this, gangs do that, gangs do whatever. I'm from TV. Maybe when we pick up Newsweek or whatever magazine might be laying around the house. For the audience I have, could you please tell us some of the most, I'd say, interesting things, let's put interesting in quotes, the things that you found out about gangs that most people may not know?
Wow, I think, first of all, you're talking about media with the glorification of media. And you can go back many, many decades and start off with the gangs in the West Side Story, which became a musical. Then you can go into The Warriors, or you can go to Scarface, or you can go to Training Day. All these different movies glorified the gangs. So that's not your taste, but you watch television. Well, what about, as we spoke before, Wayne, The Sopranos, Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
These are different television shows that became very popular. A lot of individuals were watching it to the point where it was going fifth and sixth season. Well, the glorification, what people don't understand is they're actually glorifying what is a problem in many communities. These gang members are criminals, and they're not superstars and shouldn't be celebrated or looked upon as individuals that you want to mimic. because there's always a price to pay. So with these gang members, yeah, you know, they're portraying juveniles, grown men, but in reality, these individuals are recruiting in elementary schools. Sixth grade,
really?
6-year-olds, 7th-year-olds, 8-year-olds. And when the time comes and they're 11, 12, 13, there's individuals that have not yet reached their teen years that are in juvenile detention centers that are suffering because of injuries, because of gang violence, or because of debt. They've been shot.
Yeah.
They've been backstabbed by their own gang that promised a family setting for them. Those are realities about gangs, and that's something that people don't tend to understand.
I will say this. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a town very close to where I live, they have a huge problem with the young men and gangs. I mean, teens, not even teens, stealing cars. And they get caught. They get called in front of a judge. They get charges dismissed, reduced. The kids walk. It happened 3-4 times. Then suddenly they're involved in armed robbery. They get involved in an armed standoff with a police officer, perhaps. They're shot and they're killed. And then you have mom, dad, put those words in quotes, say little Jimmy was a good boy, whatever happened wrong. I mean, are people that naive in what their kids are doing, or simply a cop-out?
Well, what I guess the community doesn't see, the gang member will see, when it comes to voids in these young adults or these adults that are joining gangs, family value. If there's no family structure, these gang members are coming in and using powerful words within their manifestos, their books of life, their lessons, always saying, we will love you. We'll provide for you. We'll give to you, but you have to give back. So they look at these different voids. Education. You know, some of these individuals don't even have high school educations, but yet when you talk about their specific gang set or the history related to the actual gang, these guys are phenomenal. They trace it back all the way to California, Chicago, New York, or religion. And that's what's scary. Sometimes these gangs use a religious aspect to the actual gang, and now it becomes more powerful for them to actually do certain things or be 100% committed to these actual gangs. So these are different links and voids that gang members can see within individuals and basically jump in, fill the voids, and know that they're going to have an individual that's going to follow them into whatever path that they want.
That's fascinating. I know I live in Wisconsin, where I Rust Belt City, we have a 40% poverty rate, we have huge unemployment problems, all those. So I understand the kid who doesn't have a home life, a safe home life, he's going to gravitate to people, she's going to gravitate to people who will take care of her, usually around here. It's a gang, right?
Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
To use religion, I mean, they're doing, it's usually, we have Bloods, I think, and a couple of, them at 13, and supposedly murders are showing up and were seen. But you spoke of religion being used. Can you give us an example of a gang that's using religion to recruit or keep people?
Okay, well, when I first started, there was a gang called the Five Percenters, the Nations of God and Earth, that was started off in New York. And based on history, that was one of the bases on why the Almighty Latin King Queen Nation was created, because there was a struggle between the Latino inmates and the black inmates within the New York Department of Corrections. So the Five Percenters that are known as the Nation of God and Earth in the state of New Jersey are seen either as a street gang or a prison gang. But they've won the right to be seen as a religious group in the state of New York. So now you're talking about a specific group and two states that border each other. If you're in New Jersey, you're a street gang. If you're in New York, you're a religious group. You have other groups like white supremacist groups that use religion, Odinism. You have Latin kings that push kingism. So these individuals know exactly what they're doing, because one of your constitutional rights is freedom of religion. They receive that at point there to be seen as a religious group. That's constitutional right. There's limits to as what we can do in law enforcement to actually track these groups. So if they do achieve religious rights, which they're smart enough to try to push for it, but it's up to law enforcement to keep tracking their criminality.
All right. I'm familiar with what Odinism is, right, and how they perverted the different Norse religions into doing the white supremacy thing, right? I get that. I know that subject. But what is Kingism?
Kingism is a way of life. When you speak to a Latin king, whether it's a king out of New York, a king out of Chicago, king out of Florida, one of their main teachings is achieving Kingism, and where it be of any religion, but you bring in the sun, which is Kingism, into your life. And even within their chants or their prayers or their oaths, they make reference to Yahweh. And we all know who Yahweh is. And instead of saying the end for a Catholic, amen, they'll shout, Amor de Rey. So they make twists and turns, and if you belong to a certain religion, you can actually see how the prayers fall in line with your religious prayer, but it's kind of tweaked in order for them to actually say, okay, this belongs to us. This belongs to the Almighty Latin King Queen Nation, and if you want to be part of it, we would show you, once again, family, religion, love, protection, by being part of this organization. Now, you need to remember, a lot of these groups are now calling themselves power groups. They kind of step back and they kind of don't like the word gangs. But, you know, they say we're a community-based organization out to help the minority group, whether it's white, black, brown. We're no longer a criminal organization, or we're an organization that basically follows and protects our race. So there's a lot of twists and turns and a lot of heavy thinking as to how they identify themselves now in 2017 compared to the gangs back in 1993.
Absolutely. What you said is very, very powerful, because to me, going back to our TV reference, right, we watch the different shows. Sometimes gang members are portrayed as being stupid, naive, idiots, whatever negative thing you want to put on them intelligent-wise. But to be so intense and using religion and using that to promote ideas, you know, dumb people aren't doing it. It takes a pretty smart individual to figure out and to manipulate people in that order, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, the image of the gang member walking around with the saggy pants, with the walk and the talk and that certain image and tattoos, that is definitely happening. Those individuals are out there. But you also have a lot of individuals with suits, ties, speaking to organizations, religious groups, schools, students, communities, and they do it for the fact that they want to see their organization, their criminal organization, to be seen as an equal. You know, there's a lot of these groups that are nonprofit, you know, and there's a lot of groups that when they first started, they started working with a lot of major cities, and a lot of major cities actually gave funding to some of these groups.
Yes.
Until they realize that these are criminal groups, and whoa, they pull back the funding and they're like, hey, wait a second, you're not what you told us you would be. And that's what gang members are. They're the sheep in they're the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Hey, very much so. I mean, I know we read all kinds of different things that many of the criminal groups have used nonprofits to get ahead, have used nonprofits to find no money, have used front people, you know, to promote a positive image of the group when the group itself is up to no good. So what would be some of the major gangs we would find, say, in the Chicago, Milwaukee area today?
Oh, wow. You know, Chicago, that area is very influential when it comes to gangs. And when you look at the United States as a whole, you divide it in three. You have the East Coast, you have the Midwest, you have the West Coast. And each of those sections came and created certain monsters within the communities that start off with two or three individuals. So when you speak about the Chicago Midwest area, you have groups like the Gangster Disciples, the Vice Lords, the Almighty Latin King Queen Nation. You have umbrella groups that were formed in prison systems that are now being emulated throughout the United States, such as the People Nation, Folk Nation. Now, when you look over to the east side of the United States, New York, New Jersey, Virginia, South Carolina, Florida, they're influenced heavy by the New York, New Jersey area with the United Blood Nation, with the Almighty Latin King Queen Nation, the Trinitarios, the New Jersey Bloods. But they've taken all their concepts, and they were influenced by Chicago, and they're also influenced by, I would call it the OG, the granddaddy of all, Southern California, which is the home birthing ground of the Mexican Mafia and the Sureños, Norteños and Nuestra Familia, the Bloods, the Crips, the Pyrus, all these different groups. So I think it's just a big blend. But when you start looking at the Midwest and the East Coast, the Chicago area was very, very influential, along with California.
Wow. And we're talking your typical, I don't know how to refer to it, I would say youth gang. But we got other gangs in this country, too. We have outlaw motorcycle gangs, too, doing that.
Yes, absolutely, and they have their own history. And the way I try to break it down to individuals is if you make a pyramid, and you look at the top of the pyramid, everyone wants to be on the top, whether it's an executive branch, a position, even law enforcement. Everyone wants to be either chief, a captain, a lieutenant, a sheriff, someone in power, someone on top. Well, gang members are the same way. So when you look at the actual pyramid, what are street gang members and prison gang members that always go back and forth because they always have that common bond? You lock up a street gang member, he's always going to end up in prison and he's always going to end up in the streets. What do they want to achieve? They want to achieve the status of organized crime. You know, those mafiosos, the Costa Nostra, the Yakuza, the drug cartels, the triads. And right in the middle, that's where you have the outlaw motorcycle gangs. They run similar to organized crime, but they're not street gang members. So you have your Hells Angels, your Bandidos, your Mongols, your Pagans, your Warlocks, and all these different groups that claim to be 1% outlaw motorcycle gangs that kind of fall right in the middle. But everyone within their specific criminal culture wants to be on the top. And when you look at street gang members, what are the common monikers? Scarface, Capone, names of individuals that have basically become historical images of organized crime.
Fascinating.
But yet within the street levels, they I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please, go on.
Yeah, and one of the things is these individuals, they start at a young age and they think they can reach that peak, but they never do because the gang life is very limited, and these individuals definitely know that what they're going to guarantee is either permanent injury, death, or incarceration. So you don't see anyone achieving that status. You don't see anyone being the main don and being that individual that's going to be the lord of a specific group or this specific criminal trait. You know, think about how many individuals you see out there that are 60s, 70s, that are still gangbanging. It's not a reality.
No, in certain cities,
if you make it to 20, 30, you're done. It's basically you're in jail, you're dead. But young kids don't see it, but yet again, because of no opportunities, they're willing to take that chance.
And they think they can live forever until they find out that's not the case.
Absolutely.
And that's all kinds of fascinating for different reasons. I mean, I'm no expert, right? I'll say that off the get-go. I'm no expert. When I look at the successful people in the mob, organized crime, they're telling old school, right? I see Lucky Luciano. I see Frank Costello, right? I see Meyer, right? They weren't, they were all capable of violence, but they'd rather talk than kill someone, and they use their brains versus muscles. And look for how to co-opt the system, so to speak, than it was to like grab a guy when they could bribe the mayor to start a casino. But yet, when I see the street gangs pull the gun, pull the knife, hit the old woman over the head, sort of thing, I don't see that. I see that it's a more of a tribe slash animal thing, or did I simplify things too much?
You know what? It's all about respect, power, and money. Okay, each gang controls the territory, whether it's a street gang member, a prison gang member, an outlaw motorcycle gang member, or even a traditional gangster, an organized crime. It's all about territory. And what happens when you step into their territory and you hold back or you disrupt their business or their money? something's going to happen. Someone's going to have to pay. Now, with the street gangs, there's so many of these individuals, and there's really no norms or rules. It's basically showing your enemy, showing the individuals within the community that if you turn to the police, you're going to have to deal with us. If you step into our territory, we're going to shoot you. We're going to shoot your family members. You're going to shoot your gang members. You kill one of us, we'll kill 10 of yours. So you have to be brutal, because when you talk about these specific pockets of territory, it's only a block, two blocks in perimeter where these individuals will protect those blocks, because those blocks equal money.
Oh, yeah.
It's all
yeah.
about money, power, and respect.
So this, what you're telling me is one level of common sense, but another level, I never quite heard it like this. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And before we get, for those people who, like I, want to get more information, where we can find you online to start having conversations with you about, read about what your activities might be, sir?
Well, I started off back in 2005, a group of individuals that would speak on their gang experience and knowledge to the community and law enforcement, and that group was called G-Step. And now it's called G-Step LLC, which is a private group that I have, and I have a website. It's www.gstep.org. All my contact information will be there. But I like doing stuff through my agency. I'm very blessed to have an administration, a sheriff, Sheriff James Gannon, that allows me to go into the community, speak to the kids, speak to adults, run different type of prevention, community outreach, and educational programs. So with the Morris County Sheriff's Office, you're able to also reach me, and that's within Morris County, New Jersey.
Wow. And for those people not familiar with the geography of New Jersey, is that by Jersey City or someplace else?
That's Morris County is located on the northern section of New Jersey, about 30 to 40 minutes away from the Bronx, 30 to 40 minutes away from the Poconos, Pennsylvania. So we're right dead center, and where we have a lot of individuals that are transient, going back and forth, and we're able to see a lot of influence of gang activity and other type of criminal activity coming in through the county.
Wow. I know we're seeing has a gang problem, we all do. I know my wife and I, and again, I can only talk to you from my experience, we see these little kids at six that come down here and they help my wife plant flowers or help me in the garden across the street. By about 10 or 12, you know, they're still respectful, right? But they don't do that sort of thing anymore. It's even worse by the time they're 14 and 15, it's like they're not approachable anymore. They're more like heavily involved in the gang. What can we do? Can we as individuals walking up and down the street do anything to influence these little kids not to get interested in gangs?
It all depends on how much you want to spend time working with these young adults and these kids. The lack of community programs, community services is definitely going to lead the kids out to the streets, you know, and out in the streets is where the big bad wolf is going to be waiting for these kids and going to start grooming these individuals to become drug dealers, individuals that'll bang and shoot at will. But it's up to us to basically be the role models. There's a lot of negative role models out there, you know, and when you look at the media, they're always focusing on players, actors, gangsters to be similar to like a hero in these scenarios of the news and in the media and the movies. But we need to make these individuals understand that that's a dead end. And we need to help these individuals. As you said, you know, these kids come in, they plant flowers. How many individuals in an urban city have the opportunity to go into someone's house and be trusted to go into their yard and plant flowers? How many gangsters have you ever talked to that has planted flowers or helped someone across the street? But you learn that. You learn that through family values, role models, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, grandparents, or leaders, law enforcement, teachers. educators. And when there's a lack of that, that's where the gang members come in.
So if I understand that conversation correctly, sir, I think that I do, that little effort of me being kind to the 6-year-old, the continuing that kindness from the 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, even if I address them with the greeting of the day and generally ask about their welfare and ask them about something I know they might be interested in, might make a difference?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, because there's a lot of these individuals that go neglected in life, neglected in school, neglected at home. And just to have someone to show that they care outside that's not a gangbanger that wants them to use them, but someone to basically grow and groom them into a man and a woman that's going to be productive in our community, that's absolutely great. And we need leaders and we need individuals to step out of their circle, their safe circle, and step and help these communities and help these kids.
Wow. I know. I mean, I thought that'd be nice to these little kids, and hopefully once they get older, made an impact. But that was my thought. I didn't know from a professional like yourself that it does make an impact. And I'll make damn sure and share this conversation with my wife and others and say we can make an impact, and we may not be much. We may not notice it right away, but, you know, we got to try. I mean, that's one thing I'll take away from this, is we have to try harder with these little kids.
Now, you need to remember, planting these seeds doesn't necessarily mean you're going to grow a beautiful flower. It might take days, it might take months, it might take years, but sooner or later, that individual you gave a helping hand is going to remember that token of kindness, and they're going to remember you, and they're going to remember what you did, and it's going to reflect. That's when that light hits, and that's when they start reflecting on all the negative and all the positive. And if there's a lot of positive in there, you're going to be able to help direct that kid to make the right choice. And there's a lot of individuals out there you can't help. You know, trust me,
right.
It's painful to know that you're going to meet individuals that are full of life, are funny, have a great passage in life if they stayed away from gangs. But sometimes the gangs win, and because of that fact, you're going to see a lot of individuals that you're going to befriend, fall in love with, and you're going to try to help them out, only to lose them to the streets and sometimes to the gang violence. And it's sad.
Yeah.
It breaks you. It deters you, but you always have to continue that fight.
Yeah, I will say that. You have to try, because you're, again, correct, is that you won't win them all, but you've got to do what you can do when you can do it, I think is something I'll take away from this phone call as well. So, as you see it, because you've been doing this for a long time, sir, is the issues with gangs growing over time, or has it become less?
All right, coming from a suburban community, stepping into the realm of law enforcement in 1996 and reflecting in 2017, it's actually grown. As I said before, there was limited gangs when I first started, and the Bloods, the Crips, Sureños, Norteños, the Hells Angels weren't even thinkable when it came to even thinking if these gangs existed in our communities. And now it's gotten to the point where these gangs are not common. You know, you go to schools and you talk to the kids, you talk to kids in college and in high school. These individuals are well familiar with Bloods, Crips that started off in California, Latin Kings and Gangster Disciples that started off in Chicago. And some of these areas that you talk in, and you've seen these groups expand and take control are not from Chicago or not from California. You're talking about little communities, suburban communities in New Jersey and New Hampshire and Virginia, South Carolina, Ohio. And it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary because the fact that, you know, individuals believe that street gangs are going to stay in the urban settings and not in the suburban areas, it's false. These members want to grow and expand their business. And with that expansion comes new territory. And with these new territory comes to the understanding that they're going to end up in the suburbs. And we need to prepare ourselves.
Yes, we do. I mean, I can speak from firsthand experience that suburban Ohio is rife with gangs, especially gangs who are pushing heroin and meth. But everybody, it seems, in the state of Ohio pushes meth, which is incredible and sadly true.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Narcotics is the main fund for the economics and the growth of street gangs. You know, not only drug cartels and motorcycle gangs, but street gangs. Street gangs that are pushing their dope. And you need to figure, if you're selling a bag of dope at a cheap price in an urban environment, you can take that same dope in a very affluent environment and triple your sale because you're going to be willing to pay more money. And gang members know that.
Oh, yeah.
They're very business savvy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a book make reference to that's written, if I can find it, I'll read you the title, is written by two economists. And they have a huge chapter in their books, which, of course, I can't find because I'm looking for it, where they talked about they found a notebook carried by a gang leader who went to 2 years of business school at a technical college. And the guy was using his business savvy, learned business school to run a street gang. And he had charts and graphs, and he could tell you who his customers were, what they liked, what time of the month most likely that he could contact again for another sale, how to upsell. You know, and I just imagine what, you know, they must be doing these days. You know, are they on social media by chance?
Social media is the big recruiting and allows expansion of these gangs. There's a lot of remote areas in the world that have street gangs out of New York, street gangs out of Chicago and California, but they became popular because of social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, where you can communicate within seconds with an individual that lives many, many miles away from you, or understand or teach certain groups on how to do things properly the Chicago way or the New York way or the California way. And that's how these groups expand.
I'll ask, being the person I have to ask, okay. I know, I understand fan base and the idea that you can attract people to like you, they can become a fan base, and therefore and you can manipulate them either to do what you're bidding, you know, buy the T-shirt, buy the album, buy the hat, come to my movie. Are the gangs using social media the same way to say, the only gang you want to be in is gang X and this is Y, and now come to our clubhouse or come to our event that we're helping to sponsor, and they use these events as a recruiting tool?
Summer bashes, open house, a musical theme party at a VFW or at a social club. These gang members would use those type of settings in order to bring individuals and meet them face to face. You know, so you get a little taste. They're not going to trust you to go into their inner circle, but they can actually observe you to see what you're about. You know, and if you have what it takes to be a member of their criminal organization, they're going to groom you. They're going to watch you. They're going to recruit you, prospect you, and eventually have you become a full-fledged member.
So they'll spend resources to find the best of a bad lat to bring them in their organization. The organization can continue to thrive and to grow.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's safe to say that your expertise is in organized crime. And if you look at, for me, I'm a street gang and prison gang specialist, but I can see the recruitment similar to all these different criminal organizations. If you want to bring someone into your family, whatever your family is, your criminal family, you know, you're not going to bring every Tom, Dick, and Harry, because someone's going to be a weak link to that chain, and that chain can basically topple down that empire. So you want an individual that's going to be pledged, committed, and you're always going to have a sponsor that's always going to be responsible for that individual until he becomes made, is a full member, and can show that he can stand on his own or her own, because there's a lot of females within street gangs. So these individuals, yes, you know, there's gangs that'll pick anybody up, but there's specific gangs and different levels of different gangs that'll basically recruit individuals coming out of the military, individuals going to college, individuals looking to go into different government jobs or that may have certain clearances that could be instrumental for them.
So bonus would be, let's say Wayne has a gang. Let's call it Wayne's gang. And
okay.
I know I have people that might be going to jail for whatever reason. So I'm going to look for someone who might work for, say, the Department of Corrections, so I know what's going on inside to benefit my fellow brothers of my gang in prison, right? Therefore,
absolutely,
that person would be, or I really, if I'm knowing, I know I've kind of conflict down the line with my different gangs. So if Johnny, I know, is getting out of the Army in a few weeks, I would be as nice as I can be to Johnny's family. So when Johnny comes out, I might have the opportunity to talk to him about, see, Johnny, come to join us, and these are all the things that we can offer you.
Or maybe Johnny was already privileged to attend certain functions or able to sit down with certain individuals that could be influential and pick out those voids that I mentioned before and say, you know what?
Sure.
These individuals, they understand me. They support me. You know, they're going to give me what so I believe
right.
that they can give the support and the love, the trust, and I'm going to give it back. You always have to remember,
right.
it comes with a price. It always comes with a price.
Right, something, a price they may not want to pay because, you know, jail time isn't fun. I mean, that's also a big myth is that you go to prison, it's a fun place. But if we can speak of prison gangs for a minute, I'm thinking inside of a prison may not be the best place to be.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck inside a tier in a housing unit that can be controlled. And think about all these different prison gangs behind the concrete jungle that are now in control of the prison and the actual streets. You have the Mexican Mafia. You have Nuestra Familia. You have Aryan Brotherhood. You have the Black Guerrilla Family, the Mau Maus, United Blood Nation. These are all groups that started inside prison before they even hit the streets. Even the New York State Almighty Latin King Queen Nation, they started off in 1986 inside Collins Correctional Facility in New York. Now, history does show that they started off in Chicago first in 1940, but the New York State Latin King started off inside a prison before they started taking over the streets.
Wow. Well, I knew that there are some really powerful gangs throughout the prison system. I'm always unsure how a gang, say, headquarters in, say, San Quentin can control what goes on in a prison, say, in the state of Florida. But I understand that does and can it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and depending on how they're transferred or depending on what facility they go, whether it's a county facility, state facility, a federal facility, can actually have that individual, especially if he's a high-powered, you know, a leader, be able to expand his empire because he's locating different areas, meeting new individuals, new contacts. You know, individuals that do federal time, they can be anywhere in the United States. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to do your time within that state that you committed the crime. So think about the opportunities and networks you're going to have. If you're from the East Coast and you're incarcerated with individuals that have the same understanding and the same passion as you when it comes to criminality, and you link up with them or her because they have connections in Chicago, they have connections in Texas, they have connections in Florida or California. That's the world.
Yeah, yeah. And there's money to be made in prison as well because not only, well, you know, if the prisoner himself or herself doesn't have it, their family members might have money.
Yeah, family members are always going to be taken care of because they're always going to be holding the position to be the messenger, to be the holder, to be the bank, you know. And within the correctional facility, you're kind of limited in what you can do, so you actually have to rely on the streets, and what better person to rely on than family?
Yeah, and they can also be hostage for good behavior.
Yeah,
if you,
yeah,
you know, if
absolutely.
You tell what, yeah, if you tell what's going on, we'll hurt mom, we'll hurt your sister, we'll hurt your brother, we'll kill your little girl, you know, we'll kill your son, we'll kill your daughter. Yeah,
there's stories in where there's correction officers throughout the United States that have gotten threatened by violence, or had their family members threatened if they didn't do something for the specific gang. And some of these officers live within communities, and they can't get away from the gangs, even though they have a solid job. They can't get away from these communities, and these gang members know who they are, know where they live, know who their wives, their girlfriends, their families, their daughters are. And once you have your loved ones threatened, they start manipulating. But it can happen anywhere, whether it's the outside or whether it's inside. The manipulation with the fear of violence, it's big with these street gangs.
Yeah. I do believe it's very big. I know that I volunteered for a short period of time with the local minimal security prison, state prison, and I had to go through a full day and a half of training of what to watch for so you weren't easily manipulated. And it didn't work out as a volunteer for guarding because it wouldn't let me have tools for the prisoners, and it's kind of hard to guard without tools. But that's another story for another day. But afterwards, you know, you read in the paper that they're finding female prison guards having sex with male prisoners. It's like, what part of smart does that not mean? You'd think that people would know better, but yet it seems they can be manipulated easily.
Anyone can be manipulated. We see politicians, teachers, religious figures, community leaders, law enforcement, correctional officers. You know, if you're a person and you have a weakness and that gang member or that criminal element can see that and take advantage of it, they will. They will.
Wow.
And all it takes is one simple yes or one simple favor and you're exploited. You know, you're in the palm of their hand. They control you.
Yeah, it seems that way. And then they can get people to do incredible things, and we on the outside think, how could that possibly happen? But as you just explained, it's something that may have started 4 or 5 years ago, one little step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow.
And they know that. They watch your every move, whether you're in a patrol car and they know how you're going to patrol the neighborhood, what you're going to be doing during your shift, or whether you're inside the concrete jungle, they know how are you going to patrol that prison block or that prison yard. They watch, they study, and then they take advantage of the weaknesses.
Right, because what else do they have to do? They're going to be there for, say, 20 years. You know, it's nothing but time. How do we kill time?
Absolutely.
How do we pass the time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
You know, and then talking about our youth, I'm not sure if many of the listeners know, but if you are associated, belong to a gang, I can personally guarantee you there's going to be a minimum of 5 years that you're going to be spending in a juvenile detention center, in a county correctional facility, or a Department of Corrections. A minimum of 5 years, you know, and that's guaranteed. And a lot of these gang members don't give that information out when they recruit with all these beautiful images, you know. So just being associated, just being part of it, it's going to have some type of negative ramification, you know, on that adult, on that child, on that teenager.
Yes, it will. And those things last longer than, you know, whatever it might be temporarily. Those things go on for years. And then, of course, sucks them back into that system because they can't escape it, which puts society in a catch-22 because we want to stop and punish the criminal, but yet if we make it too hard for the criminal to get rehabilitated, we just, you know, it never ends. I don't have a solution. I do not have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you this question. You have all these years of experience in gangs. You've seen them come. You see some come great power and fall apart, and you see the ones trying to make it to the top, and whatever happens. If you had to name, say, the three most dangerous gangs in the United States today, what three would they be, sir?
You see, each community, each state has their power gang.
Ah, okay. Sure.
And that would be unfair, or it would be something that a gang member will basically put his ear to the radio to see if I call out their specific gang, because they're all dangerous.
Okay.
And they're all powerful. And to say that a Hell's Angel is better than a Mongol or a Blood's better than a Crip, you know, these individuals will take those words and say, listen, what these guys have to say. And they'll use that to recruit or to encourage individuals to say, see, this is what we're telling you. We are the powerhouse.
Oh.
Why do you want to join them? Why do you want to be part of them?
Because you're on this national podcast and they talked about us. So that makes us great. Why don't you join us? or, you know, we
Absolutely.
Have this great power nationwide. Yeah, why don't you be part of us? Right, yeah, I understand. Thank you. I was not thinking clearly. I should have thought with that one myself.
No, you know what? These are all great questions because knowledge is power. And if you don't ask the questions, you're never going to get an understanding. And that is always going to be inside of you. I should have asked that question, or you're going to start reading things, or you're going to have individuals mislead you to the false truth. So it's better to hear from an individual that sees it and understands it and give you an honest, true opinion. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I'm very fortunate with, is my honesty with these gang members, and the honesty equals respect. And the respect, then comes the knowledge. And where these gang members feed me the knowledge, I'm able to pass it on to my peers, you know, to law enforcement, to teachers, to religious groups, to parents, to students.
Sure.
And now, some of these gang members, some of these gang members, you know, after 10 years, 15 years banging out and just seeing that gang life doesn't pay back or give any revenue back into their life, they'll tell you, I don't want to be in the gang. I don't want to be part of this, but I took an oath and I can't step away from it. Or if I do, it follows me, tracks me, and brings me back. And that's the difference between an older gang member and a young gang member. A young gang member, when they first enter that arena as a gangbanger, whether it's a Blood, a Crip, a Gangster Disciple, a Mara Salvatrucha, these individuals are banging hard. I'm a Latin King killer, Crip killer, and I'll shoot you, I'll do this, I'll do that. But that wears down. That wears down. And then when you start seeing that it doesn't give you anything back, and you start realizing the truth that you gave up a lot, sometimes your family, your friends, your community, or your life because you're sitting in a cell, you realize it's not worth it. But yet at that time, you can't turn your back. There's a lot of individuals that have, but they have to relocate. Or there's a lot of individuals that say that they have left the gang life. But the way I see gang life is an addiction, you know. And when an individual is going through recovery, what is the primary thing they tell you to do? Stay away from that substance. But usually they go back to that substance when there's something traumatic in their life or something's not working right, and they go back to drinking, smoking, using that needle. And that's gang life right there. So when something's not working out with these individuals, they go back to what they believe will help them, calm them, support them, love them, and then they fall back into that ugly circle.
Because that's what they're used to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is I suspect there's no 50-year-old gang members, and not very many of them.
You see them every now and then. They call them godfathers, you know, advisors. But, you know, you look at them, you kind of scratch your head. And, you know, the ones that are really, truly out there that still claim it are those that understand that, hey, listen, it never gave me anything. Don't make the decisions I did, you know.
Yeah,
but they also have problems separating themselves from those groups.
It would be difficult. I mean, if you – I can only imagine, I'm not condoning, I have to understand that if I'm a little boy, a little girl, and the streets were seen, I got no safe place to live, I go home, I get beat, I may not have anything to eat, I may not have enough to eat, I may have to share my food with my brother, I may not have a safe place to sleep. The only people who care about me, the only place I've been able to sleep and get food is with my fellow gang members. And that's the way I grew up from, say, I'm about 8 to, say, 21, say, right? And that's what I'm used to. Yeah, I may go into jail a couple of times. It's not really that bad. I didn't like being beaten up. I didn't like these things. But when I got out, they were there for me. I could see, you know, you're now 25, 27, 30s, and you're still alive. It would be hard to leave because that, in your mind, that's the only love you were shown. And how hard is it to walk away from love? I mean, and I don't want to compare and contrast unfairly, but I know any number of women being in abusive situations who are there because they've been there for so long, they don't know how to leave.
Absolutely. And if that's the only alternative you have, or you could not take that road and take a road that you know you're going to suffer and regret. You're going to take the road to it's going to make your life a little bit more easier, even though there's consequences, you know.
Yeah.
And you might get hurt, and you know that there's certain situations that might end your life. You may just have to take those roads. And sometimes when I talk to gang members, I can't fault them because there's no resources out there, and they had nothing else but to go to these groups to survive in life.
I got to tell you, the one thing that opened up my eyes tonight, I'm really thankful that you brought it up, is this year I took the opportunity to help someone that was helping a contractor with my home. I went out of my way. I fed him because he had no food. I made sure he had a place to shower, which he took advantage of a couple of times, right? And it ended because I thought he was playing me, and he may have been, he might not have been. And I regret maybe telling him to go away as harshly as I did, because what other choice did he have other than befriend someone I thought he was that well off with? Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And that's something, going back, you can't save everyone, you know?
No, you can't.
You wish to have that individual that you're trying to groom and lead in the right direction, learn very quickly, and start making those right decisions. But a lot of these individuals don't understand right decisions, and they're still going to stumble, they're still going to fall.
Yeah.
It's going to be up to them to learn how to make right decisions. And
right,
and I found myself.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you know, like I said, you know, before you can learn how to run, you need to crawl, you need to walk, and that's the process a mentor does, is learning and teaching that individual to stand up on their own.
Yeah,
and to walk
I couldn't afford spending dollar after dollar watching him make bad decisions. It was just painful, and I didn't see any effort for him to change. It's like, I can't do this anymore. Especially when I felt him manipulating me to try to get more from me. But yet, in my mind, I think maybe I could have tried something else. Because you're right, there are no, I mean, I live in Service City, Wisconsin. We'll spend $65 fucking million, excuse the French, on an arena for downtown Racine, but we cut the bus system so kids can't get to the jobs up on the interstate. Okay, do you want these guys to get jobs, right? We want people to get jobs. Don't they need a way to get to work? If the bus system can't get them there, what are they going to do, walk 12 miles? No, it's easier to sell hash.
It's tough because it all comes down to budgeting, funding, money. And then when gang members realize it's about money, they're like, listen, you're struggling just the way we are. You know, you can't do this within your communities. Well, guess what? We're able to do this. We're able to feed young kids or take care of them after hours and make sure they're safe, and their wicked minds, they're safe because, you know, we protect them from other rival gang members or from individuals that are going to abuse them. Gang members will always take the road of, we are the protectors of the neighborhood, but don't realize that these are the individuals that are the terrorists that control the neighborhood, and the individuals that live in these neighborhoods live in fear.
Yeah, that's all the part thing of the it is all part of the thing, and it's not simple solutions, you know. It's not putting them in prison, locking away the key, because that doesn't work, as we know. It's not letting them get by whatever they want to be, because at 12, it's got to be excused, because at 18, it's certainly get better, because we know that doesn't work. But we need to start having conversations within our communities about what we have as a problem and try different community-based solutions so we can stop the cycle of what we see, which is destroying cities.
Absolutely. Get these individuals when they're young. Mold them into beautiful young men and women that are going to be productive in their communities, productive in life. You know, think about it. When you're born and you're raised, how many individuals in pre-K or kindergarten, second grade, actually walk up and say, I want to be a gangster. I want to be a drug dealer. I want to be a shoot 'em up, blood, crip, vice lord. No, they want to be doctors, lawyers, police officers. They want to be professionals. They want to do something positive. But yet somewhere in life, that dream fades and they become part of that culture if that culture exists and that culture is powerful within that community. And that's something you don't want to do, is have these criminal elements become the child's future and kill those dreams.
Interesting thing, if I want to bring this book up in passing, are you familiar with the rapper called 50 Cent?
Yes. I did a detail back in the day in New Jersey, and it was during a record signing for 50 Cent, yes.
Okay. Are you familiar with his book called The Tenth Law? No, The Fifteenth Law. I'm sorry,
Believe-
The Fifteenth Law. What?
No, it's called The Fifteenth. No, I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, it's a book he wrote. He was helped to write it by others, but it is an absolutely fascinating book, which I will highly recommend, because he talks about how his life growing up, he didn't have choices, he made them, and he made some wrong choices, and he figured out that if I don't want to get killed, I'm going to have to change. And the only way that I can change is by I change myself starting now. And he goes on and on and on about how much he's able to change. And he encourages people, youth especially, the 50th Law, right, by 50 Cent Robert Green. And it's all about, if I can do it, you can do it. And this is, and the more powerful you are, the more you learn, the more powerful you are. Knowledge is key. Knowledge is all powerful. Get that knowledge. Go to school. Read books. Pay attention. Learn from your friends. You know?
Absolutely. And think of his background, where he grew up in the mean streets of New York, and what he's become, you know, from having produced television series to selling this water product and gaining tons of money. When I worked that detail, something that impressed me about 50 Cent was he was in promoting a record, and he was signing for fans, and it was supposed to have a certain cutoff. I think the cutoff was at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, because it was in a local mall. He stayed there to the very last fan, and no matter whether you're white, black, big, tall, skinny, doesn't really matter. Anybody that came in, he shook the hand, looked them in the eyes, and spoke to them and made them feel important. And that was powerful. I respect them for that.
Yeah.
I respect them for
that. I do too. I mean, I got not only the hardcover book, but I got the comic book written for boys, basically, who don't read books, but they'll look at a graphic novel and know these things won't change the world, but we have evidence of someone understanding I have influence on these people, and I'm going to use my influence for something good. Right?
And that's what we need. We need more individuals like that, and finding unique ways to make our youth pay attention, pick up a book, and learn how to become a better person, and pick that knowledge and say no to all the negatives that's out there, because there's tons of negatives
out there. Absolutely. And last one, we have to figure ways to encourage them to do some of the positive things. But before we let you go, sir, because we're running up against that clock, how do we find you once again online?
Okay, it's Gang Suppression Through Educational Program. The acronym's GSTEP. It's gstep.org on the website. You could also find me on Twitter, on my Twitter account, GSTEP. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. Or you can go to the Morris County Sheriff's Office website in New Jersey and reach out to my administrators if you ever need an individual to speak to your youth, your community, to your law enforcement staff. I'm there. You know, I'm very blessed to be working in a great law enforcement community, and I'm blessed to do what I'm doing.
I'm so happy you came on the show. And the little English lady, which we met before the show started, is telling me it's time to end the show, and she's going to break both my kneecaps. So we will have to connect on LinkedIn. And I look forward to talking to you again soon and many other subjects and bringing you on again. Once again, sir, from the bottom of my heart, I'm so thankful you came on the show this evening.
Hey, Wayne, you're super duper, and I love the fact you said I'm good looking.
Hey,
take care.
What do we do here? And remember always, with girls, please, 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 please tell your friends about the show, and remember this too. This is a Made Men production. And with that, everyone out there, good night.